Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 28th of September, recording at 9:31 p.m. And yes, it's still British summertime. Now, first a quick look here at the last week, as this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes and in stock markets. Well, they're quietly ranging is the way I would describe it, and they vary from quietly steady. A number of the Asian markets, so the ASEAN sector in particular, where we are still seeing a new high or two, and to softer in the case of Brazil, which it has had a pullback following sharpish rallies up to mid-September. Wall Street has been really quite steady overall, particularly the mid-cap and small-cap indices. That's the S&P mid-cap and small-cap indices. The S&P closed out tonight at 1440, but they've lost upside momentum here. NASDAQ was down. Only the U.S. indices were down mostly less than half a percentage point here today. So we're in a pause overall. More on that a little later. Now, long-dated government bond prices have been generally firm. That means yields have dipped a bit during this lull in for many stock markets. The US dollar has been generally firm. There are exceptions. The yen has been stronger still, although it weakened here today back to 78 against the dollar. And the Indian rupee has had quite a strong week again this week, liking the decisive action from Prime Minister Singh. Now, precious metals have remained choppy. Today we saw platinum and palladium have some reasonable gains here. Palladium as it 640, nearly 641, platinum at 1667. Gold, which had a big day yesterday. You remember gold was in a tight range and it just broke through the underside, got down to just below 1750, then roared up yesterday. It's down 5 today at 1772 and change. Silver also, which had hit a new high, then pulled back but very much in its range here overall. But this does represent a loss of momentum overall. Big drama on the day here. Here we saw large rallies by corn and also wheat on lower than expected estimates for U.S. crop carryovers. So that's taken wheat back up above $9. It's up 47 cents, and it's taken corn back up to 756. So it's an upward dynamic for wheat and a big upside, key day reversal for corn. They led the move. Soybeans were quiet, but then responded with some short covering of their own and closed at 16. Crude oil has been firmish, quietly firm, 112 and a bit for the Brent, 92, just above 92 for the WTI. Industrial metals have been relatively firm within ranges overall. And I think those are the main stories here in the that's the main those are the main highlights on the action here in the markets this week. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, the big story in recent weeks has, of course, been the additional QE. And that comes from the Fed. It also is coming in a big way from the ECB. It's coming from the Bank of Japan, purportedly. And we've also got China stepping up its stimuluses. And I should have mentioned in that review that China's had two decent upward dynamics in the last 2 days on more news of stimulative measures. But we've had a good run for China accepted, which has only performed in the last 2 days. But this China accepted, we've had a good run here in a number of stock markets on the QE news. And that created short-term overbought conditions, and they've gone into ranging consolidations overall, as I've been describing, and Owen's been describing here in the audios. Now, steadiest among those really are the Asian markets here right now, with the ASEAN sector pressing up close to its all-time highs. Now, despite that, despite pressing up to their close to their all-time highs, they've been there for a while in an overall ranging pattern. One of the reasons for that is because China was underperforming, and so the China leash effect was acting as a drag on the performance of the smaller ASEAN markets. Now, this is all important because China, which will be closed next week, so I won't have anything new to say about it next week, but if China does follow through on the upside and we do get more stimulative measures, and I think we will, then potentially that could be quite bullish, that would cause the ASEAN stock markets to break out on the upside once again. And because an improving China would, of course, revive growth prospects generally. And that would be good around the globe overall, not least for mining shares. So I think that's going to happen. Whether that happens sooner or we have to wait till we're closer to the end of the year or in the first quarter of next year to see that happen, it will actually take place. Now, China did announce today that the power handover would occur. That's all been expected, but they hadn't actually said it. So that decennial handover of power to the next generation of leaders will actually take place. Hopefully, that means, and probably that means, that the infighting has ceased. Xi Jinping has reemerged, as you know, as the leader and heir apparent. But remember, he'd gone walkabout, or certainly hadn't been seen for a fortnight, at least a fortnight earlier in the month. So hopefully this is all steadied, and a bit of good governance here with the new people anxious to help the economy, that could really give quite a lift to the Asian economic zone, with a knock-on effect around the world overall. Where China is going to be hurting is, of course, on its exports, particularly to Europe. So it really does need to stimulate that consumer demand a bit more. But I think that's what's going to happen, whether it happens quickly or, as I said a moment ago, we have to wait until the end of the year to see that actually take place. I don't know. Given the last 2 days' upward dynamics on stock markets, I would be more optimistic than most people have been about China. Now, The U.S. There's a lot of if I well let me know, let me pick up Europe first. We'll take them in time zone sequence. Mario Draghi's leadership as head of the ECB has been impressive. Bundesbank commentators would dissent themselves perhaps from that summary, but you know what I mean. He's acted like the central banker of last resort, as he should. He has helped to create the background for that banking union. The politicians have been falling more or less in line, or have been dragged more or less in line. And the markets have responded wonderfully well. I mean, really, the outperformers, I think I saw on CNBC, you may have seen it as well, or it was picked up in the press that you take, I think the month of September, somebody was saying, well, Greece had gone up over 14% and China had gone down 10% or so. The European indices generally rallied very sharply starting in August and from quite low levels, and they really did lead over that period the global economy in terms of performance. And this is justified because sentiment was changing from an imminent forecasts, widespread forecasts of an imminent breakup of the euro. Fortunately, not from fuller money. We've never felt that way, although we've always reserved the right to see any euro member leave if they wished to, although all declare and have consistently declared that they did not wish to. But not to digress on that point. Strong rallies, improving sentiment generally from very low levels. But what happened is that with the help of that QE, they've moved ahead of the fundamentals a bit. So we're in a pause phase now, and we've seen this for more than a week, and it's likely to continue for a while longer, and we will probably see a bit more of a pullback. We saw some of that today, 2.5% down on France, 2.25% on in Italy, 1.71% in Spain. And the problem is that although the ECB has bought some time, and although the politicians have been paring back on entitlements, that now the attention is focused on what's going on the street. And we're getting lots of demonstrations, some riots, a whole host of protests. And that's hardly surprising because nobody wants to see their entitlements cut back. And there is a bit of a vicious cycle which has been going on for a while now, as you know, whereby we get some genuine cutbacks in expenditure. And what happens, though, is that that reduces GDP growth in those countries. So their debt problems are not really improving, and therefore they need to make more expenditures, and that slows growth down even more. So tax revenues are falling. And how do you break out of that cycle? Well, it takes a while, doesn't it? And things get worse before they eventually get better. Mario Draghi is rather optimistically forecasting that they will definitely get better and that Europe will see some growth in 2013. I hope he's right, but that's an optimistic forecast at this stage. So what I would caution against is too much optimism on Europe. We're unlikely to see a great deal of that. But equally, I would caution against too much too much pessimism, and as Europe pulls back, I think we're likely to see again some arranging corrective phase in response to this strong rally. But if Europe holds half or more of those gains during the pullback, that will bode well for the year-end run and beyond. And I wouldn't be all that surprised to see that actually take place. Now, what about North America? It's been solid action due to the QE, a solid action in the stock market due to the QE. There is a fair amount of concern about the election result and also about the fiscal cliff. I mean, my view on the fiscal cliff is that absolutely nothing will happen about that until after the election. Then there will be the better part of 2 months for the lame duck, well, given the Christmas break and Christmas and New Year's break and so on, in terms of actual working days, they'll have about 5 weeks there, 4 or 5 weeks, so in which to get a bipartisan agreement among the lame duck Congress members, congressional members, so that an agreement on to avoid going over the fiscal cliff is in place before election, before Inauguration Day in January 2013. Now, I think that will take place. So I don't think that we'll have a total impasse and go over the fiscal cliff, because that would be a lose-lose situation all the way around, and I just don't see that happening. So that's one uncertainty that is we can probably look beyond. And there, I don't want to make a political comment on this, but if you look at comments from most business leaders, they would appear to be weighted heavily in favor of Romney, but the polls are not indicating a Republican victory in terms of the White House. So how that will wash out in terms of an influence on the market, my guess is that you'd get a Romney bounce, but I don't think that he's going to win, at least certainly not on current evidence. And my view is that it will take a combination. I've said before that it would, it would take massive apathy among, or overconfidence among some of the, a good number of the Obama supporters for Romney to slip through. But since he has fallen behind in the polls a little bit more recently, I think it'll take more than that. I think he has to do very well in the debates. I mean, both parties will claim victory, but from the standpoint, from your standpoint and the standpoint of impartial observers, the winner of that debate, of those debates, really does need to be Romney if he's to have a chance of securing the White House. So that'll be very interesting to see that outcome. But my feeling is, as said, that we would get a Romney bounce, because that would probably be come as a surprise. But I think that's the long shot, less than 50% chance. Now, this pause phase that we have for Wall Street and some of the leading European stock markets, such as Germany, up near their highs, or just up near new highs for the year overall. And again, QE has, as I mentioned, has helped to push prices ahead of valuations somewhat. So we've had, we've been in an overall decade and counting, more than 12 years and counting, period of valuation contraction. these massive injunctions of QE have lifted or increased valuations. So we've actually seen some valuation expansion in terms of share prices. So that leaves markets technically a little more vulnerable than they might have been otherwise, and it will take a reasonable amount of money on the sidelines coming in to support this overall. My worst case scenario that I've mentioned is that we get a correction of 10 to 15% and a little bit more for some of the emerging markets. Now that's worst case. So I think sort of the middle ground is that we just range for a few more weeks, pull back a little bit more, but it's really a reaction rather than a correction overall. And that would enable markets to digest this short-term overbought condition. Best case scenario is that China does better than people have generally expected, and that creates a leash effect which causes the ASEAN markets then to all break upwards and improves sentiment, and we get smaller reactions in Europe and the United States, and push on strongly into the towards the year end. And I think the odds favor either the best case to middle case, so in other words, not a bad outlook here overall. I think the chances of one of those two scenarios is better than 50-50 in here. Now, why might that be? Despite my saying that markets ran ahead of themselves, and the news in terms of Europe at any rate is going to focus on big demonstrations in the cities. And my answer to that is because the worst of these crisis forecasts have certainly not been realized. QE is a very, very powerful tailwind here for stock markets generally. Veteran subscribers will know that I've always felt that monetary policy was the most important fundamental indicator by far. And I think also the chances of China coming right for a change are really improving daily now. So it's just a matter of time, and that process may have actually begun. So those factors, I think, plus the fact that corporations generally, certainly the autonomies and the dividend aristocrats that Fuller Money likes so much, these companies have strong balance sheets. We don't buy economies, as I've said on so many occasions. We buy these individual equities, which are increasing dividends, which actually have earnings, although the rate of earnings growth has slowed in the last quarter and will be slowish in the fourth quarter. But nevertheless, they are still, as I say, raising dividends and making profits for the most part. So again, this is far from a disastrous background here overall. So wrap that up. My best bet is that we do see these stock markets above today's levels by the end of the year. Now, what about long-dated government bonds? I think that first bond prices are currently in a technical rally phase. If the equity outlook is reasonably benign, then I think bond yields will push up a little bit further. And in other words, bond prices will come down a little bit lower. I don't think we'll see anything explosive. And the reason for that, I'm talking now about gilts and bunds and U.S. treasuries and JGBs. I don't think we'll see anything explosive because there's just too much QE going on. And there'll still be the uncertainty factors over the election and the fiscal cliff and what's happening in Europe and what's happening in China. And that will prevent, certainly should prevent, any rout in the long-dated government bond market. But my overall view here is that we are in the topping out process, a lengthy topping out process for long-dated government bond prices. Therefore, we are in a lengthy bottoming out basis here for yields. What will eventually drive those yields higher? Well, we've been saying it for a while now on Floor Money. That will be when the velocity of money picks up, and that's an indicator that we want to watch fairly closely. And it's not going to pick up without some genuine economic recovery. So I'm not holding my breath for that. I think probably we're going to see more of muddle through economic activity here overall. Although Asia has the potential to be a bit of a game changer. And I hadn't mentioned India and all that. If I lump the subcontinent in with the broader Asian group, this is appropriate because the Prime Minister's full damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead here on the reforms has certainly excited investors as far as India is concerned. And that, you know, it's all down to governance. This is true. What's true for China is certainly even more so for India. And it's not as if there's any mystery as to what needs to be done. They'll never reach a consensus, but if the opposition parties play a waiting game rather than moving in to try and vote down, topple the Congress party as they now could, Prime Minister Singh is leading a minority government right now. But the longer they hold off, and as there isn't a general election until 2014, I don't think they'll hold off that long. But if they hold off for a good many few more months, then I think India could do really quite well. So, now moving on, precious metals. Now, I've mentioned in pretty much every audio that after that good blitz to the upside, which confirmed the hypothesis that precious metals had completed the downside part of that medium-term correction in response to the accelerations this time last year to the upside, that we were now back in an accumulation phase, and this would take precious metals up, let's led by gold and silver, take them back close to the all-time highs for gold, at any rate, not silver, but for gold, by year-end to early in the new year, and that within the new year, at some point, we would see new all-time highs, certainly for gold. Now, again, the big driver behind that is QE, and certainly, I don't think there has ever been a more bullish fundamental factor for gold in terms of convincing people that this was a monetary asset and that they really should have some in their portfolio than the quantitative easing and the competitive devaluations that we're seeing among various different fiat currencies, and the probability that we will see short-term interest rates in the major economies remain low for a good many more months at least. Now that to me is heady stuff here for the precious metal market. But as you know, we saw platinum run back up to $1,700. I beg your pardon. Yes, no, $1,700. And we saw palladium run back up to $700. We saw gold get close to $1,800. We saw silver up a little over $35. These are all psychological resistance levels where we have also seen some previous highs. And that, coupled with a short-term overbought condition, was enough to create a more choppy ranging phase. This has all been forecast in here. That makes it tricky for futures trading, but poses no threat or problem to the long-term bullion holders. And I think this is an exceptionally attractive overall environment, medium-term environment, for these precious metals. So I definitely expect higher prices for all four of them by year end. And I think we will see a good 2013 for the precious metals as well. I won't guess in terms of what the highs are likely to be next year, but I think that the surprise is, because I haven't even really thought about it that much, because targets are a pure guessing game. It all depends on the sentiment and liquidity. But I think the surprises will be to the upside. I'll put it that way. Now, industrial metals have had a very good run over the last month or more. And they, too, have paused here to consolidate, just like the precious metals. But the pattern evidence suggests to me that the lows for industrial metals are definitely in. Not that many people have been saying that, surprisingly. But that, if I'm right on that, that is good news, certainly for the mining sector. And it also suggests that we're getting, it could be a good forecaster of what's actually taking place in China, or going to take place in China. So this is quite promising, I feel. What I'd like to see, market doesn't care what I would like to see, but technically, watch this consolidation. It's been quite narrow so far. In other words, prices have remained very firm. Now, if they're able to hold half, let alone more, of their gains off the lows, that will bode well for the medium term. And I think there's a good possibility that that will actually be the case. And so one of the surprises that I've been forecasting for a while now is that we are likely to see better recoveries from the mining sector than people are generally expecting. That requires higher metal prices. For precious metals, QE is enough to do it. For industrial metals, QE helps, but it's really reliant on the China story picking up, and then that will we will have all the sentiment factors moving in favor of those mining shares once again. Now, what can go wrong? Crude oil prices, they're firmer than I'd like to see, but we're not spiking to the upside. Israeli stock market, I'm not digressing much, but the Israeli stock market has rallied very sharply in recent days, and that's on a belief with which I agree and have agreed all along, that there would be no major attack on Iranian nuclear facilities. And I wouldn't be surprised if there never is, but I think that we'll get a combination of pressure and sabotage delaying Iran's progress. But if anything does go wrong here, I think it would be the crude oil prices if I am underestimating risks of what might happen regarding Iran towards the end of the year or early next year. If we get much more instability in the so-called Arab street, that could certainly lift prices even further. We are still in the second difficult decade here in terms of relatively tight supplies for oil overall. Now that's slowly been changing in that the supply has increased and the demand has not, but we are getting speculative hedging in this oil market, keeping the price at least $10 higher than it would probably be otherwise. So there are commodity price risks ahead for the global economy, and those of you who've been with Fuller Money for the last 10 to 12 years might be saying, well, thus it always was. And that's true. We're still in a commodity super cycle. Overall, it's taken a big breather, but we are back seeing generally firmer prices overall. And the respite that we were seeing in the grain and bean complex, which was a welcome relief as prices fell down, today's action indicates that we can't hope for too much here. In other words, we've seen those big dynamics to the upside for corn and wheat in particular. Well, soybeans closed out with a big gain here on the day as well. So food supplies remain tight, and that's going to be a problem throughout the rest of this year and well into next year. So commodity price inflation is likely to rear its head once again, but hopefully not enough to cause major disruptions to the global economy. So that's pretty much it. Best bet, precious metals over the medium term. And on that note, have a fabulous weekend. All the best.